from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, both chambers have started to move on Governor Tomlin's bill to aid the state's craft brewing industry. In the House, the bill received some minor changes in committee. Senators are still working to craft a bill that would allow charter schools in West Virginia weeks after the process began, and we'll talk with the Senate president now that the session is past the halfway point on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Members of the Senate Education Committee continued their detailed look at an act allowing charter schools in West Virginia. After 3 weeks of discussion, members were presented with their first amended version of the bill, but the chairman says there's still a lot of negotiating to do before a final bill is approved. Senators were presented today with a committee substitute for the Charter Schools Act of 2015 that includes four changes. New language would allow public charter schools to obtain some state insurance coverage and clarified that the schools are eligible for funding used for special education programs. There are provisions that require a 60% vote of the teachers and a petition of the parents and school service personnel who want to convert their regular public school into a public charter school. The bill also defines charter school teachers as employees of the school instead of the county, like a regular public school educator. Some senators today had issues with the changes, but committee chair David Seipold says there's still a long way to go before a final version is ready for committee members to consider.
I didn't realize how complicated education in West Virginia was until I started chairing the committee and digging into it. But it is a very important piece of legislation. It has a lot of moving parts. That's why it's taken so long to roll the bill out. In fact, council and I worked for 9 days on the bill before we even presented it to committee. And as you've witnessed during the education committee meetings, we have gone through two rounds of amendments so far, and I expect at least two more rounds before we're finished.
Senators have been working closely with interest groups to find a version everyone can agree to. State Superintendent of Schools Dr. Michael Martirano has been involved in the process, as well as union representatives like Dale Lee of the West Virginia Education Association.
If we're going to do this, we need to do it right, and we need to ensure that every student in West Virginia has access to the best available education options out there. And that would mean that if these charter school would have something that worked, we should be able to replicate that for all of our students.
So far, Lee says senators have been willing to hear teachers' concerns, but agrees with Seipold that there's still work to be done. His top concerns include charter school teachers' abilities to still accrue seniority in the system, what options students and parents have for kids who don't want to attend a charter school, and what rights teachers retain, like the right to a planning period.
I appreciate that we're doing it publicly and not behind closed doors, and that we're getting to have input all the way around.
Seipold says because of the concerns of so many interested parties, his committee decided to take a different route in working this bill.
In fact, we're approaching this in sort of an unorthodox manner. I'm not sure it's ever been done this way before. The rules of the Senate dictate that you can only amend a section of code one time. And then if you want to amend it again, you have to undo the amendment and amend it over. But instead, we're taking another approach. The approach was approved by the committee that after each day, we take the amendments, we roll them into a new committee substitute, so it's like a new document, and now we can go back in and look at it with fresh eyes. Everybody has the same document in front of them, and it's not piecemealed together.
He says so far he's happy with how the committee is working through the complicated legislation. Seipold expects a final committee substitute to be approved late next week. Yesterday marked the halfway point, day 30 of this 60-day legislative session. Senators worked into the evening to approve a bill that scales back the state's prevailing wage law while union workers looked on. But they still have many crucial bills to come before the Senate before they wrap the first session in decades with a Republican majority. Joining us to discuss prevailing wage and what's next for members of his chamber, Senate President Bill Cole. Senator, thank you for joining us this evening.
Certainly my pleasure.
Sorry we had to miss you last night, but we're certainly glad to have you today. Let's start with that prevailing wage bill. Senator Blair stood on the floor yesterday and said that there were meetings over the weekend with stakeholders to find this compromise. Senator Unger wasn't happy with those meetings and the fact that they happened behind closed doors without the public to look onto them. So why do it this way? Why that process?
You know, I have to be honest. I think it was a little disingenuous of Senator Unger to say that it was behind closed doors and that nobody knew about it. I might remind him of his water bill last year that happened in two committees in 2 days and a lot through the night. But what I would say is this, that we talked about that for some 9 days, 10 days. We laid the bill over numerous times. I mean, we kept it in play. To my knowledge, certainly all the stakeholders, interested parties on all sides were not only invited but showed up at meetings, and certainly those meetings were open to anybody. We didn't make it wasn't a public forum. It wasn't going to do any good to get 1,000 people or 100 people in a room and get into a shouting match. We wanted a good working group of people, but everybody was represented at the table, including senators from both sides of the aisle, and we came and we went. We didn't try and strong-arm anybody or direct the conversation. We simply wanted to get to a good solution.
So you've said in the past, though, that you were for a repeal of the prevailing wage. Are you happy with this compromise?
You know what? I did say that I was for a repeal, but the deeper that I got into this, the more I thought that a middle ground was perhaps the better way to do it, and quite frankly, I led the process against the wishes of a number of our caucus. So, but I think the deeper I got into it and the more I talked to the different stakeholders, I just felt like this was a better way to go. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, when you have bipartisan support, I think it says that the process worked. I'm very hopeful as that bill goes down now to the House that it stays very close to what we sent, stays intact, because I actually think the governor would find himself in a position to sign it as well.
Let's talk about a bill that also passed in the House this week, the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. Leadership has decided to only send that bill to one committee in the Senate, just Senate Judiciary. Why is Health not going to look at that bill?
You know what? We debated almost the same, well, virtually the same bill last year, both ends of the Capitol for hours and hours and hours. I think the House has debated it thoroughly. The Attorney General has weighed in and was part of working on that legislation to make sure that it was something that he did think was constitutional and could pass muster in the court system. Certainly something he could defend. On the Senate side, by Senate to Judiciary, you send it to the largest committee. You have the most people involved with it, but we have a lot of important legislation we're trying to get through, and I want to move it as quickly as I can.
Let's talk a little bit about the bill that we just saw a story about, charter schools. Senator Seipold told me today that he took the advice of the unions when they said, please slow this bill down, and he's really working it through the committee process. Is he keeping you updated on the progress of that bill?
We meet every single morning at 7:30, all the major committee chairs, my majority leader, myself, and our council meet every single morning, so we get an update every day. I have to say that Senator Seipold is he's working hard. He's the first one there, the last one leaving. He's there on the weekends and really paying attention to everybody. Anybody that has some input or some thought of how they can make this a good bill is spending time with Dave and numerous times, a lot of times in and out. He's scrapped it, started over, rewritten, and I genuinely believe that at the end of the day, we're going to have a great charter school bill.
We've seen so far in these 30 days a lot of tort reform, some education bills, some other health-related bills. What's next for the Senate?
You know, we still have a lot of work to do. I mean, we advanced a lot of good legislation that I think will ultimately result in West Virginia being a better state for businesses to locate to and bring those jobs that are so, so important to our state. We have a lot of cleanup to do with what we started in the first 30 days. We're just now getting a steady flow of the bills down from the House, and we start the process all over again. And you know, if we agree with what we have, then it's pretty simple. And if we change a little bit, then it's back to them. And does it go to conference committee? So we have a lot to do.
But we're already seeing that. Some bills have already been sent and assigned to conference committee, which I haven't been at the legislature for an incredibly long time, but I've never seen that happen this early in the session.
Well, the thing we can't get back is time. It's why we went to work right from the opening bell. And if there's extra time, we'll have it at the end, but I don't want to run out of time. We want to be in a position to advance any good piece of legislation, and there's certainly a lot out there. We try our best to prioritize it, but there's a lot of good legislation still out there for us to consider.
Well, Senate President Cole, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Coming up, some news about the governor's brew pub bill, but first, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today.
Among the bills introduced today, Senate Bill 480, to exempt the first $20,000 of income received by retired public employees and retired teachers from personal income taxes. Senate Bill 487, to create the West Virginia Freedom of Conscience Protection Act, to ensure that in all cases where state action burdens the exercise of religion, strict scrutiny is applied. And Senate Bill 490, to add waste management facilities and timber operations to the protected industrial facilities list, and provides for criminal penalties for the removal, destruction, or damage of property that impairs normal operations. Up for passage in the Senate on Monday, Senate Bill 378, relicensing electricians without retesting under certain circumstances. Among the bills on second reading, Senate Bill 274, the request of the governor to allow flexibility to the Department of Health and Human Resources to comply with federal mandates under the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families program, and to keep sanctions in step with those of surrounding states to deter individuals from taking advantage of West Virginia's welfare system. And Senate Bill 429, creating a one-day special license for charitable events only to sell beer, similar to a wine provision. The West Virginia Alcohol Beverage Control Administration annually receives numerous requests for these licenses and grants them for wine, but there's no such license for beer.
The House Small Business Committee took up a bill this week to address the growing concerns of resident brewers in the state over licensing and operations. House Bill 2385 is backed by Governor Tomlin, who first noted the issues the industry is facing in his State of the State address last month. As Liz McCormick reports, the bill is finally receiving some legislative attention.
The bill was introduced to address the concerns of the 11 resident brewers in the state. Four of those brewers do not have brew pubs on their premises. This limits the amount of product sold to strictly on-site consumption or in kegs to bars and restaurants. This legislation would allow those four brewers that don't have brew pubs a limited function to sell their product in a growler or large jug from the premises, increasing the amount brewers can sell and increasing their revenue.
The problem, as I understand it, relates to canning. If you're a small brewer, you may not have the capacity to afford a canning operation. So if you want to market your wares, you've got to pretty much sell it, like in kegs, to establishments that can sell it, I guess, by the drink. This would open it up for them to sell for off-premises consumption from their premises.
After more discussion and a few amendments to clear up some technicalities, the bill was referred to the House Judiciary Committee for further consideration. In connection to breweries and other small businesses, earlier this week, a popular distillery in the Eastern Panhandle that has attracted over 50,000 tourists to the state closed its doors because of legislative issues. Bloomery Sweetshine Distillery in Jefferson County makes all of its products on site, provides tastings, and sells its products directly from the premises. The organization, however, says it's been misclassified since it opened in 2011 as a retail liquor store. The distillery says due to this misclassification, it's cost them too much money and has been killing their business. The owners say they will not open again until this issue is addressed by legislators and the West Virginia Alcohol Beverage Control Administration. Delegate Paul Espinosa, vice chair of the House Small Business Committee, as well as Delegate Stephen Skinner, the minority chair of the same committee, both from Jefferson County, were concerned when they heard of the distillery's closure.
You know, obviously in a week when we heard some very good news from the Panhandle with the announcement from Procter & Gamble, while we're very excited about that, you know, we certainly are concerned any time a small business, you know, indicates that perhaps they're not going to continue operating in West Virginia. I do know that Delegate Skinner and I and our colleagues, we have introduced legislation in the past to try to address some of the concerns that the Bloomery Plantation Distillery has. And we are working together along with Delegate Upson and others to introduce legislation this year that will address some of the issues they have, such as the ability to operate on Sundays. I think one of the bigger challenges that we have is dealing with some of the tax concerns that the distillery has. I am working with Delegate Skinner and others to look at some legislation, talk with other groups that are involved.
Delegate Espinosa says the reason the tax issue is so complicated is because it would require a lot of reevaluating of the current tax structure, not just for the Bloomery Sweetshine Distillery, but for other retailers as well. Delegate Skinner says he currently has two bills he's eager to introduce. Delegate Espinosa is a supporter of both.
The two bills specifically that we're on together, one would deal with the Sunday issue. I mean, in various ways, they deal with being open on Sundays and able to operate a business on Sundays that deals with alcohol. The other bill that we're still discussing is dealing with the punitive nature of Bloomery selling from their premises and the interaction between that and retail liquor stores. Right now, Bloomery Distillery has to pay a fee to a liquor store for the privilege of selling its own product. And the liquor store that receives that fee doesn't even necessarily have to market the Bloomery's products. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Nowhere else in the country do we see this. And if we want to have a flourishing distillery business, wineries in West Virginia, we have to eliminate that.
Delegate Espinosa says he's hopeful the bill allowing distilleries and wineries to be open on Sundays will have a lot of support from both sides of the aisle. But he's not sure there's time this session to address the tax issue.
I'm concerned that because of the short amount of time we have, trying to address the tax issue is going to be more challenging than perhaps addressing the ability for those establishments to operate on Sundays. But we're committed to you know, doing everything we can, if possible, to address it this year.
Would you like to add anything to that?
Oh, I think that these issues are not partisan at all, and especially because when we're dealing with distilleries and wineries and breweries all across the state. And there's nothing partisan about how we've been dealing with this, and working together we can find a solution.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
On a related note, Senate Bill 42 to allow restaurants, private clubs, and wineries to sell alcoholic beverages at 10 a.m. on Sundays passed the Judiciary Committee today. Its next stop is the Senate floor. We saw some major pieces of legislation be approved in both the House and Senate this week, and those bills, including one to expand the administration of a drug that reverses overdoses, were sent to the governor for his signature. Here for a look back at the events of the week are two members of the Capitol Press Corps. Whitney Burdett is the State House reporter for the Charleston Daily Mail, and Mandy Cardosi is the State House reporter for the State Journal. Ladies, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's start with the big issue in the House this week, the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. Mm-hmm. The speaker said on the show this week, that bill is constitutional. The way we've passed it is constitutional. But Whitney, what are some of the outside groups, the interest groups, I should say, saying?
Well, how you fall on this issue sort of determines whether you think this bill is constitutional. We have the pro-choice women's groups who argue that the bill is unconstitutional. They're citing the landmark abortion Supreme Court case Roe v. Wade. In that decision, the court held that states cannot impose restrictions on abortion prior to medical viability. At that point, 40 years ago, viability, which is the point in time where a fetus can survive on its own outside the mother's womb, was about 28 weeks. Now we're looking at 24 weeks, sometimes even 22 weeks because of advances in medical technology. Obviously, the 20-week time frame that this legislation imposed is prior to medical viability. There are bills in other states that have faced a lot of litigation currently, in the court system. The pro-life groups are saying that because the courts haven't decided on those pieces of legislation, that we can't really tell if the bill is constitutional or not. So I guess we'll see.
Mandy, you heard the Senate president refer to this earlier, but this bill, a similar bill, did pass the Senate this year, and I think they're expecting to do the same.
Yeah, I think so. I think the Senate is a little bit notorious for being a little more level-headed about legislation like this. I know I talked to Senator Daniel Hall, earlier this week when it did pass in the House and asked, what would you think about a bill like this coming to the Senate, and would it go through, and would it, make it and be okay? And he said that the senators weren't interested in passing something that would just go straight to the court system. They don't want to pass something knowing that it's just going to be a fight. So hopefully the senators will look at it with a very clear picture of how it should go through and just give it a lot of consideration so that they don't have to impose their veto override on the governor if he would veto the same bill, which he did last year.
So there was another bill that passed today in the Senate, this net metering bill that, Mandy, I know you've been following. Senators from some of the big solar energy producing areas say the bill is a must to protect the people who already have these solar panels in place. But an interest group is saying, that's misleading. It doesn't do that.
Yeah, the net metering is really interesting right now. They passed a bill that repealed the alternate and renewable energy portfolio standard. And then that's like Senator Snyder, who comes from the Eastern Panhandle, where there have been a lot of solar companies invested in the state. He was concerned with the net metering, and he said, we need to keep it. There's companies who invested. So they kept it in the repeal. But now there's a bill that just passed the Senate today that the interest group is saying there's really no reason to keep it in the repeal, because now the way that they're defining net metering doesn't make any difference to actually have it. So they're kind of saying that it's just an attack, a further attack on the solar industry in the state. And senators have clearly showed that, at least Senator Snyder and the ones who come from the Eastern Panhandle, have showed that they will stand up for their constituents and the people who want
and
to see that.
The senators passed the bill with no nay votes today. I think the vote was 30-0. So yeah, They're obviously showing that they're supporting that bill. Well, ladies, thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today.
Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 2722, to require oil and gas lessees to make royalty payments within 120 days of production. House Bill 2725, to add language to allow playgrounds to be funded as part of projects considered by the school building authority. House Bill 2727, to permit out-of-state healthcare professionals to provide charity care at free medical clinics. House Bill 2741, to encourage the practice of uncompensated care for low-income patients by providing immunity from liability. House Bill 2742, to update the Child Support Guidelines table based on current economic data. On second reading in the House on Monday, Senate Bill 6, relating to medical professional liability for nursing home administrators. House Bill 2157, to provide that absentee ballot fraud or intimidation of voters is a felony. House Bill 2160, making the West Virginia schools for the deaf and blind eligible for funding from the School Building Authority. House Bill 2387, to initiate a comprehensive transformation in school leadership through a process that includes input from reports by Vision Shared and Imagine West Virginia and the State Board of Education to assist it in developing recommendations for better schools to the legislature and the governor. And House Bill 2646, to legalize and regulate the selling of fireworks, to create the West Virginia Veterans Program Fund, to impose a special fee on the sale of fireworks and use the proceeds for the fund. There's a public hearing in the House chamber on Monday on House Bill 2289 to authorize the Department of Environmental Protection to promulgate a legislative rule relating to requirements governing water quality standards.
This has been the Legislature Today. We'll be back Monday with more legislative news and information from the first regular session of the 82nd West Virginia Legislature. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.